welcome to the Mazer Patrol podcast. I am, as always, Kevin, and I have two great guests with me today. Start with Josh.
Yes, Josh, sometimes known as Captain Casual, but I think I've decided to drop the title.
Not for today's subject matter.
No, not for this. That would be very inapropos.
And also joining us is Lux.
Hello, hello. I'm new here. This is my first time on Maze Patrol. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, if you also listen to Kaiju Transmissions, and you probably should be, you will be familiar with Lux's voice, but if you are just meeting them for the first time, you're in for a treat as well.
Yeah, you should be listening.
Yes. But today, we're going to talk about a certain recent mini-series that's come to Netflix, or at least it appears to be a mini-series. We'll get into that a little bit if we think there's going to be a second season. That's an adaptation of Yu Yu Hakusho. And Yu Yu Hakusho is a series that all three of us are pretty longtime fans of and pretty passionate about. And as such, we have a lot of thoughts about this new Netflix live-action adaptation.
Big thoughts.
And I will say right off the bat, I think there's a meme that goes around quite a lot that's like all live-action adaptations of manga are bad, and I 100% disagree with this meme, but there are times when I am not a fan of every adaptation that comes along. I think all three of us are, you know, probably net negative on this new series, and that's no way meant to disparage the people who enjoy it, but I think we'll give our justifications for what rubs us the wrong way about this, and we'll kind of give our thoughts also about, you know, what things we do like about it.
So yeah, I guess usually typically in these situations we lead off with a synopsis, right?
Yeah, I mean, let's just kind of like give a little background about Yu Yu Hakusho, because it's
true.
At this point in time, I think a lot of people might not be familiar with the source material, because this is a manga that ran in Shonen Jump from 1990 to 94, is that right?
That sounds right.
Yeah, and got an adaptation as a... I think that anime was 92 to 94, and the and there were some live-action Korean movies from 92 also, which is an interesting point of contrast with the current live-action adaptation, because they're quite different from one another. But since then, there hasn't been a whole lot of media. You know, it's been kind of crickets. You know, we had some OVAs, and occasionally we have some merchandise that comes along. And the U.S. got the series kind of late in the game. It was 2003, I think, when it started.
It was two or three. I can't remember the exact year. But yeah, when it was running on first Adult Swim and then on Toonami.
Yeah.
Got an excellent U.S. dub. English dub. One of the better ones, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those dubs that it has a lot of the hallmarks of a goofy Funimation dub at that time, which I associate with, you know, Dragon Ball Z. And it does the things like reusing voice actors over and over and having kind of crazy accents. But for that particular dub, it does kind of come together.
Particularly Chris Sabat's Kuwabara, which, yes, I unfortunately the dub has poisoned my pronunciation on all these character names. I am aware that it should be Kuwabara.
Yeah.
And Yusuke Urameshi, not Urameshi.
I'm sorry, the dub has also poisoned my brain. It's all I ever watch is the dub.
Well, you know, that's a problem with old dubs in general. You know, you don't have people as familiar with Japanese, and they'll put emphasis on the wrong syllable, and you know, that's as a result, we still will say Akane and Ataru instead of Akane and Ataru. But at least none of us, you know, remember the magic serpent and say Arakamaru instead of Orochimaru.
Yes.
No, we all watch Naruto.
But yeah, I mean, so basically our premise for Yu Yu Hakusho is it starts out kind of as a detective show, but quickly turns into a supernatural battle shonen series. And it's peak in my viewpoint.
It's really excellent in that it manages to take Togashi's propensity to shift gears mid-story, but is executed just really well. You know, it manages to go from feeling like one sort of story archetype to another without really feeling like it's missing a beat. And I think a big part of that is just the strength of the characters that carry the narrative. You just have a smaller cast that nevertheless is written really tightly. You've got really clear interactions between individual characters and whatnot. Really good team dynamics. And I think it's got good pathos to it too. You know, it deals with some topics that I think hit close to home for a lot of people, because some of them are it's general enough that a lot of people can see themselves in some of the issues they're dealing with, particularly on those of impermanence, mortality, and one's place in the world and all that biz, you know, the sort of stuff that you see other shonen series cover, but there's a certain the character writing has a certain it's got a certain punch to it that makes it really feel grounded in a story where people are, you know, shooting giant energy blasts out of their finger.
So what I got from that, you said because there's a strong cast and there's lots of punching. Was that it?
Well, yes. Essentially. Isn't that all we ever really want out of a good shonen battle series, right? Although I say that, but really one of my favorite arcs in the entire series is the initial one where it's not clear that it's about to turn into a battle series at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the plot basically kicks off with the main character being this ne'er-do-well delinquent. He's cutting class, he's smoking, he's beating kids up, maybe engaging in some petty theft as well, probably visits pachinko parlors. And, you know, through some crazy turn of events, he sees a kid about to get hit by a car, pushes him out of the way, and gets run over, and Spirit World has no idea what to do with him, so he goes through this whole, like, ordeal to come back to life. And, you know, in the manga, it's like two entire volumes, and by the time the anime gets adapted, it's five episodes, because they said, oh, well, you know, Yu Yu Hakusho is known as a battle series. You know, it's all about Yusuke shooting the spirit gun, and, you know, Kuwabara with his spirit sword, and you got the bandits, Hiei and Kurama, who join them later, you know, make their fighting team, and they, you know, and it's well known for having one of the better written tournament arcs of, you know, in all the shonen manga. So, you know, by the time the anime starts getting made, I mean, that's basically what it's known for. See, even this revival arc, that's what I keep calling it. I don't know if it's got a more proper name. It's kind of even then getting pushed to the side a little bit, even from the beginning. And then so that kind of leads us to, this announcement of the live action. It's sort of faded from the public consciousness. You know, it had this revival 10 years after it aired in Japan because it had this brief moment of, it had a moment here in the States, you know, for probably about, you know, 2003 to 2005. There was a card game and all that business. I was all about it back then. I had this sense that when the live action adaptation was announced, we were going to see some degree of further compression of, oh, the story isn't about, you know, mystery or ghost stories or whatever. The story is about people getting punched in the face. But I always felt like, you know, it was sort of what I mentioned before. I think one of the best things about the Yu Yu Hakusho story is the way it changes gears. If you just start in straight battle mode from the beginning, I always felt like you kind of lost something.
Did both of you experience it from the beginning, or did you come in like partway through?
You mean like from the first episode?
Yeah.
So I think the first episode of Yu Yu Hakusho that I saw may have been the third or fourth episode on Adult Swim.
Mm.
And I went back and I saw the first and second episode later. I think the first one I saw was the one where he helped Kuwabara pass the test or whatever, when he was still a ghost.
Oh, okay. How about you, Lux?
I think I have the weirdest initiation. Actually, the first thing that I saw was because I was one of those people who would just kind of browse what was in Suncoast Video and like pick out what was around and what looked cool. And I picked up the VHS of Poltergeist Report movie. And
heck yeah.
And so that was my first experience, was the Poltergeist Report movie. And it was something. It did fortunately lead to me watching the show when I saw it start airing on Adult Swim Toonami. And I watched it from the beginning when it started airing there. And it's like, oh, wow, this is so much better. So, yeah, I've been there, I guess, since the beginning, you could say, of when it was localized here, and have been following it ever since.
I'm actually right there with you, because Poltergeist Report was the first thing I saw. So I saw the second movie on VHS. Then I found The Fighting Game, the last fighting game on SNES.
Mm-hmm.
From there, I had a friend that went to Japan, and he brought back a couple of volumes of the manga and a couple of TV recordings. So what he brought back was some parts in the Middle of the Dark tournament for the manga.
Oh boy.
And Three Kings arc for the VHS recordings.
I was like all the way from the end. That's crazy.
Yeah. Well, the thing that I thought was the most amusing about it, and these recordings would have been from when it was in reruns probably, but I remember seeing commercials for Yu-Gi-Oh and thinking, wow, those have really cool character designs. Too bad that show will probably never come here.
I think the first Yu-Gi-Oh thing I saw was an ad in a Sonic comic, but that's a story for another day. Yeah, I think basically the way it went for me with Yu Yu Hakusho is, like I said, I saw the first episode, you know, probably the third episode-ish on Adult Swim, and I was watching it like every week, like religiously. I was like, everybody stop, Yu Yu Hakusho's on, I need to go watch this thing. And then it got to I think it was like episode 21, it was the fight with Suzaku. It gets to the end of that, and then they rolled back over to episode 1, which I don't really know what was going on there, but I think they might have been buying time for the dub to get more episodes finished or something. Either way, it wasn't too long after that they moved it to Toonami, and of course, me being the teenager that I was like, oh, now it's censored. This is no good. I got to go find another way to watch it. Because it was censored on Toonami, you know. So they were releasing the DVDs in, you know, 3 to 4 episode batches at that time. And so basically I was running over to it would have been Borders Books, rest mm-hmm. in peace, that I was buying the DVDs from as they were coming out to get through basically the entirety of the Dark Tournament, Chapter Black, and the Three Kings arcs. I basically stopped watching on television at that point. I was like, well, if it's censored, then I don't want to watch it. I need to hear Justin Cook cursing, and I need to see the blood. Otherwise, I'm not a cool kid anymore.
It's kind of funny. I did something similar with Dragon Ball Z, where it was like when it reached the end of the original Ocean dub and just kind of stopped on Toonami, I was like, well, I want to watch the rest of this, and I don't feel like waiting. Why don't I just like watch the Japanese version? So I ended up like ordering fan subs on VHS of the entire series from like some shady person online, and they just showed up a whole bunch of VHS copies in a big ass box, and I just watched a bunch of fan subs of Dragon Ball Z, and it was great. Uncensored Dragon Ball Z.
Fantastic. I can't even begin to imagine how expensive that would have been for the remaining episodes of DBZ on tape.
Thankfully, the fan subs were super cheap.
Were they doing it on EP mode?
Oh yes,
that's a way to do it.
So you get your full 8 hours on the VHS.
It included the movies as well.
Oh wow!
Were all 13 movies out at that point?
Yeah,
would have been.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, because DBZ ended in 95, so like by the time it started airing on TV in the States,
it was long over already.
Yeah, but I mean, there was that period when Toonami was experimenting with a whole lot of older shows, and some of them went over well, like our Yu Yu Hakusho, and some of them were Knights of the Zodiac. So,
it's a shame. I love Saint Seiya.
Yeah. speaking of things that had live action adaptations this year.
Ooh, yes. Boy, that's another egg to crack.
Yeah. But yeah, basically, I think the fact that we haven't had very much for a long time is, I think, why there was a lot of anticipation for this new adaptation on Netflix. But also, I was going in with an open mind, but everything that we saw coming out was giving kind of red flags as we were building up towards it. You're getting the same impression.
Yeah, I mean, my first thing was the fact that it was live action at all. I mean, I get it. Some of these live action adaptations are pretty good. I mean, shoot, I actually liked the fully westernized live action adaptation of Death Note more than a lot of people did. Whether it was faithful to it or not, I didn't really care. I just thought it was entertaining. And so kind of going into this Yu Yu Hakusho thing, I said, well, okay, I can get behind this if they're doing something different. And the first trailer that I saw was making me feel a little bit better about it, because I was like, okay, they're doing more like kung fu action type stuff, right? Where we're going to do less of the it's all about the big spirit energy effect stuff and more about a bunch of hand-to-hand combat business. And so they're going to use the benefits that you get of live action, where it's a lot easier to execute fight choreography in live action than it is animated. So I thought to myself, well, between that and maybe you get a little more space for the more grounded aspects of the stories, you could revisit some stuff, maybe even compress some details that were unnecessary. Things that were originally unrelated in the story that could have been related to each other, or potentially even ideas be seeded earlier in the story. I could see potential for a tighter rewrite. But I think pretty much once I heard that it was only going to be 5 episodes, I want to say I lost all hope for it, but my expectations were immediately lowered as soon as I heard that, because I also saw the second trailer where we saw Toguro, and I said, so we're going to have 5 episodes and we're going to get to Toguro. I was like, dang, I'm pretty worried.
That was the main thing for me as well. Although even earlier than that, like the first image that we got, I thought was fantastic. And it was just an image of each one of their hands.
Yeah.
So you'd have, you know, Yusuke with the doing the finger gun pose, and Hiei with the dragon flame, and Kurama holding a rose or whatever. Like, it was all their like kind of iconic stuff, with the exception of Kuwabara for some reason. The exception of Kuwabara for some reason is a running theme in Yu Yu Hakusho.
Yes. I do feel like it's this running joke. They just, yeah, one character who actually has legitimate abilities is treated like they're completely incapable of doing anything.
It's purely based on character design.
Yeah, probably. He's the one not pretty character.
Yeah, so like first image, I was like, all right, this looks good. And then second image comes out, and it's the cast headshots. And I saw the wig on Kurama's actor, and I was just like, oh no.
Yeah, the costume design. Sure is costume design in here.
Yeah, I think that's the part where I started losing it as well, was when we first saw the wigs, and I was like, oh no, these look worse than the stage play.
Mm-hmm. They do look worse than the stage play, and that's kind of flabbergasting.
Yes.
Not to mention the fact, too, that just to jump ahead briefly, then we'll jump back just because we're talking about the costume design, is that when you actually get into the show, you realize that, like everyone else, all of the extras are wearing very nondescript clothing, which makes all of these character designs, which didn't stick out like sore thumbs so much in the anime or manga, absolutely stick out like sore thumbs. It's like you have these not great costume designs, kind of crappy looking wigs, and on top of like very normal looking everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Kurama in particular really just sticks out like a sore thumb. Like, yeah, right. We only get to see the school outfit, like in the very short little scene in the hospital room, but all the rest of the time it's like a very fancy outfit, and he just sticks out. It's like this dude's walking around in public, you're gonna notice him.
Yeah,
well, and that's supposed to be his school uniform, which is awkward with that, because, you know, when he changes into his normal outfit in that hospital scene, that's what he should look like all the time.
Yeah, exactly. And it looks good.
Yeah. So because when he turns into his, you know, red hair version, that's the demon form, then it negates everything that happens later with him turning into his demon form.
His Yoko Kurama form. But they had to check that box, and we're going to be coming back to box checking a lot.
Yeah, we'll check that box later.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that first set of images, I was already a little concerned, and then seeing the trailers, that's where it kind of like solidified a little bit that it's going for a style, and this is something that I see a lot in stuff that's produced by Robot Communications, that's, you know, very desaturated kind of color palette that works fine for, you know, Parasite or something like Alice in Borderland or, you know, various other adaptations that they've done. But the problem with that is if you're going to go with this kind of like lots of nighttime stuff, the desaturated, grounded, realistic look, you can't have your characters look like cosplayers.
Which is what they end up looking like with their costume design against those backgrounds.
Yeah.
Which, hey, to be fair, I thought the set designs looked great. They didn't look great with the characters in them, but like taken by themselves, I thought the sets looked great.
Yeah, everything I actually think looks awesome in the show. It's just the characters themselves do not look like they belong there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And again, as Josh was saying, I think the action is very well realized in terms of like there's great choreography, better choreography than the anime has, frankly.
Yeah, because sort of we were talking about this a little bit before, that like the choreography is somewhat de-emphasized in Yu Yu Hakusho, because it's really more about the big moments. And, you know, in the places where the anime has to fill in between big shots in the manga, it does a suitable job, I would say. You know, this was a week-to-week airing show. They obviously had some limitations, more obvious early in the series. It looked good enough. But what this live action was able to do was to take those in-between moments and fights and really punch them up. You know, so you'd have cool stuff kind of happening the entire time. Really good fight choreography, I thought.
Yeah, I would come out and say that of all of the live action anime stuff I've seen, this is the best fight choreography of any of it. It's the highlight of the entire five episodes of seeing all the fight scenes. Everything is just beautiful. Like the very first fight we see in the first episode is just a little short one between, I believe, Yusuke and Kuwabara. It's our introduction to Kuwabara, and the way that's shot, where it's just like we get all of the characterization we need from Yusuke and Kuwabara in that moment with this big dropkick moment that's shot down an alleyway, with Yusuke coming, you know, from out of screen with a big dropkick to Kuwabara's face, and it's like, yes. It's like that's the perfect scene. It's like, all right, I kind of love this. And it kept that going throughout the first and the second episode. It did very well pacing the action and the drama and telling that early story with him coming back to life in the first episode, and then the second episode introducing the artifacts and the three demons. It did all of that very well, and it set up everything very well in those first couple episodes. Everything was paced well, and the fights were very good. And then it just started, it hit fast forward and started checking boxes. And we can get into talking about like episode 3 is where it turns to crap.
Yeah.
I was having problems already with the first episode, but a couple of things I can forgive. I think the fact that the whole resurrection is very rushed. They kind of they gloss over a lot, and I understand that the most popular characters in the show are not the main character. The most popular characters are Kurama and Hye. So they are stepping on the accelerator like they have been possessed by a bug demon, trying to get to Kurama and Hye as quickly as possible.
Well, and see, this is sort of like getting to my earlier point was, right, the original manga spends a decent amount of time bringing Yusuke back to life because the whole thing was about rehabilitating his character, or perhaps more revealing Yusuke's real, his true nature.
Because everybody,
the ordeal of coming back to life.
Yeah, everybody maligns him in real life, and he's really a good person. It's just everybody views him as a bad person because he gets in all these bad situations trying to help other people.
Well, yeah, because he's violent and he's hot-headed and he doesn't really, you know, have any respect for authority. But most of the other stuff that he was doing is just acting out. He doesn't have the best home life, you know, and he's not a particularly clever person either. So, you know, his life's been difficult and he just hasn't handled it very well. And I think he also, you get the sense that he's under the impression that nobody cares about him. Mm-hmm. And when he goes to his own wake, and they cover this in every version of the story, that he realizes that, you know, people actually mourned him and that he was wrong, that nobody cared about him, and that sparks a change in him. You know, in the manga, like I said, you get two full volumes of this, probably could have build 10 to 12 episodes in the original anime, but again, they had to step on the accelerator a bit to get to Hye, Kurama, and fighting, right? And then here, it's like I said, I knew this was going to happen. Any future adaptations of Yu Yu Hakusho, whether they were intended to be compressed or not, we're going to continue to chip away at that arc because nobody's getting punched in the face. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a mistake because it did such a good job of setting Yusuke's character up. I think he would have been a more popular character if the anime had given more time to that story, personally.
Yeah, so, I mean, one of the examples of them taking a shortcut here, and it's actually, they add a scene in order to take a shortcut, is that there's a kid that's being bullied, and Yusuke, like, takes the money from the bullies and gives it back to the kid, right, as opposed to keeping it like he did in the original. But then, in order to have the whole arc where, you know, the spirit world is shocked that a guy like this would save a child, that kind of undercuts that if he's already, you know, standing up for the weak in his day-to-day. So they kind of gloss over that and just say, well, this was unexpected, therefore we're going to give you a chance to come back to life.
And I personally liked the silly bureaucracy of the spirit world in the original story, that they said, oh yeah, you can come back to life, but you have to go through this ordeal where you're holding this egg that is absorbing your spirit energy based on your deeds. You know, and oh, if you do good deeds, then you'll be brought back to life. If you do bad deeds, your, like, soul will be eaten by some horrific eldritch monster or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that, like, even that ends up not being the way he comes back to life. I don't want to spoil too much for people who haven't seen the original, but it's pretty fun. There's, like, yeah, there's just endless spirit world bureaucracy, which is, like, this running gag in running through the background of Yu Yu Hakusho, which, yeah, has basically had to be entirely cut for time in this. And I get it. That's not like the primary draw of the story, but this is one of those, gets back to one of those. You can hit all of the plot points, all the main plot points of a story when you do this hyper compression. But what you end up losing is all of the flavor, you know. Mm-hmm. You lose all the stuff that I think made Yu Yu Hakusho unique, you know. I think that comes up a lot in this particular production, just because there was no time left to include any of it.
Yeah, I think it very much ruined, in fact, the characters of Botan and Koenma, because we don't get to see that Koenma is a child. He's yes, just a baby. He's always in his adult form in this live action version, and the way he's introduced in this live action version is that, oh, he's not Enma, he's Enma Jr. And it's like, okay, yeah, we get that, but then for the rest of it they just call him Enma anyway, and he's treated like he's Enma. So he ends up looking like a total doofus and an idiot for like this whole thing. Which, yes, it's in character for the anime version of him, but for the live action version, it's like he's supposed to be the guy in charge, the guy who knows everything, and he just looks like a doofus, and it doesn't make as much sense because we don't get enough time to characterize him. And then Botan, is Botan even in this? Yeah. I mean, the actress is trying, and I don't know whether or not she's really cast well, because she's barely in this, and she's not really the same Botan that we get in the anime or the manga.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because of course, you know, where was Botan the most relevant? She was in the Bringing Yusuke Back to Life arc and the quote-unquote Spirit Detective Saga, aka the first four cases, right?
And so, since we've cut all of that out, then we have really no Botan. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Their Botan basically doesn't exist at that point, right? And the funny thing is, of course, the anime finds fun ways to continue to use some of these side characters in the Dark Tournament and onwards, but only because they had already been established was that worth doing at all. Mm-hmm. Whereas in this case, yeah, you've basically eliminated all of Botan's utility to the story, so why keep her at this point, you know?
Yeah, she effectively just appears to be, like, Koenma's background secretary.
And speaking of, like, vestigial things, if Koenma's not going to take the baby form, why have him still have the pacifier?
I mean, they could hope for to have a season two where it pays off.
Yeah, we actually see the technique that he's been charging in the pacifier. Maybe.
And as a point of comparison, I mean, I'm sure there are the people that are like, oh, well, you couldn't have a child actor in this role. Well, I have some news for you about the Korean live-action version, because it does, in fact, have a little kid in the role of Koenma, and it works just fine.
It works perfectly.
Yeah, and I mean, that's one where, you know, it's three movies, and the first one is just, you know, the ghost arc. The second one is the three treasures, and then the third one is the Saint Beast arc, and, like, frankly, that's a perfectly reasonable way to do it, except then you don't have the Dark Tournament, and the Dark Tournament is the thing that's the most famous thing in Yu Yu Hakusho. So,
and but the tough thing is that part of what makes the Dark Tournament so good is that you have already had 26 episodes to establish your main characters, mm-hmm. to have sent them through these multiple trials that already has you invested in them, and then they go to this crazy tournament where everything is off the rails and the owners are all trying to cheat to get him killed. And they're always, like, down at least one person in every round. And that's what everyone loves about it. But the only reason why you're invested in it is because of the entire, all the stuff that happened before.
And you know what's great about those first 25 episodes or 26 episodes is they have Genkai in them. And we get to know Genkai, and we get to know a lot more about Genkai. And in the live action version, we only see Genkai in episode 3, and Genkai is introduced. Genkai does training things, I guess. And then Genkai's like, oh, snap, Toguro is going to be coming. Here, Yusuke, you're done training. Here's the spirit orb. Get out of here. And then Genkai is promptly dead. End of episode 3.
Which, yeah, to contrast to those who have not, you know, consumed the original, you know, instead we get Genkai as this strange, enigmatic psychic who has absolutely brutal training regimens that Yusuke is basically complaining about for the entire rest of the series. I did like that this had Kuwabara being trained too, because there really wasn't the best excuse for not having him also train under Genkai, considering that she probably deemed both of them worthy by the end of the little mini tournament that they had for that arc, other than the rules be the rules, and that Yusuke won, so he's the only one who gets trained or whatever. I did like that this had Kuwabara get trained also. But yeah. But what I was going to say was, is that, yeah, like, the whole thing of the Spirit Orb is, like, Yusuke goes back for two other trainings prior to receiving the Spirit Orb, and then it's this whole big deal where, like, it almost kills him, and Genkai almost takes the orb back because she thinks, oh, she hasn't given him enough time to train with it, he's not ready, and, you know, and Yusuke overcomes this, like, huge trial, and you realize at that point, because you know where the story is going, that Genkai giving up the Spirit Orb was essentially admitting that she couldn't
beat Toguro and that she'd accepted that. And that she was willing to, she wanted to pass on her energy before she was, you know, before she was inevitably going to fall in battle to him, you know.
And then we get to see that battle in the anime, and it's like, yes. we don't get any of that in this because it cut out the entire tournament, which she's there for the tournament. She's part of Team Urameshi. So it's like, we don't get any of this characterization for her or any of her relationship with Yusuke. So it's just, it's not even earned. It's just, it's like, it's just, well, this is a power up. This is Deus Ex Machina. Here's a spirit orb.
She's basically reduced to like, a master in a 90-minute, you know, Kung Fu B movie. Shows up, teaches the, you know, fated hero some cool moves, and then, you know, gets off by the main villain. You really lose a lot of that Yu Yu Hakusho-ness, you know, because it gets so compressed down.
And it stinks because they got a great actress. It's I believe it's the woman from Lady Snowblood.
Yeah, it's Mako Paji.
Yeah, she does great in the role. It's just she's barely on screen.
Yeah, so I mean, most of the scenes in isolation, I think, work fine if you have seen the source material.
Yes,
but it feels like a best of reel, you know, like a recap of stuff, largely. You know, the first episode I feel like kind of works as a narrative. I think that there is one scene that really derails it, and I'll get back to that in a minute. But I do wonder, there are the new adaptations that are meant to bring in new audiences, but I feel like there's also adaptations that are purely nostalgia bait, and I wonder for this one how much it's probably just banking on established Yu Yu Hakusho recognition, because even for as old as that show is in Japan, it still seems like it has a decent following. You know, I can go into a Cospa and buy a Yu Yu Hakusho t-shirt any year.
Yeah, we come to the question of who was this made for, and it's very hard to tell after watching it, because, yeah, the first couple episodes do sell it on, yeah, this could be made for about anybody. It introduces the characters well, and it does everything well enough to please people who are already fans of the show, and then it falls apart for both audiences, I think, in episode 3 and beyond, where it starts moving so fast. And there's so much stuff going on, and there's not enough characterization that people who aren't familiar are just going to be like, what is happening? And then people who are familiar are going to be like, there's not enough happening.
Yeah, like, I think the thing that really puts a bow on all of that is they, you know, after Toguro is defeated, Hiei looks at Kurama and goes, oh, by the way, you know, here's the Conjuring Blade. I don't need it anymore. And
yeah.
Like,
yeah, that remember
doesn't
this
matter anymore. Who cares? That was episode 2. That was like light year. You know, that was ages ago. Who cares about the Conjuring Blade?
All he used it for was just to cut open his Jagan eye in this version too. So it's like, why was he even holding on to it?
Well, and that was strange too, because that initially looked like kind of a smart rewrite, because it was this recognition of, oh yeah, anyone cut with that gets this third eye, which actually would have been a better excuse for Hiei to have the third eye. But of course, originally the reason why it was probably giving people a third eye is because that was supposed to be the whole gimmick associated with Hiei, who was originally going to be a one-off villain. Mm-hmm. He was, his whole thing was eyes, so like someone being cut with the sword that he's using would also get the third eye or whatever. But they took that, they turned that around and said, oh, well, Hiei has a third eye. He gets the third eye by using this magic blade so that he can, you know, locate his sister. But as we know, he couldn't, in the original work, he couldn't locate his sister because she was, you know, hidden behind talismans. So from a narrative perspective, what you end up getting is he gives himself this eye, which immediately is useless. And then later he uses the Dragon of the Darkness Flame. But there was no causal link between those two things, because the monologue that Hiei delivers to Zeru in the first round when he uses the Dragon of the Darkness flame the first time, about how these, you know, flames were derived from this eye that was implanted, that like you don't get that backstory. So instead, he just summons the dragon. And so, yeah, that's definitely one of those moments where you're like, well, clearly, if you were familiar with the series, you'd know what that all meant. But at the same time, it's very unsatisfying as a fan of the original, because it just kind of, he just has the dragon, uses it once. You know he's not going to be able to use it again if you know anything about the series. So, okay.
And it takes away any meaning behind it as well, because it just becomes a checkbox. It's... Yeah. We don't get any of the reasoning, like you said, behind it, that all the storytelling in the Dark Tournament where he uses it the first time and it cripples his arm and he's not able to use his arm or compete in the next couple of rounds, and then has to rehabilitate and learn how to properly use it for the final round against Team Toguro. And we lose all of that because it's just, oh, he's got to do the Dragon of the Darkest Flame this once. Check the box. All right, he defeated Bui.
Yeah, it was really interesting. It was really interesting how they basically took both Hiei and Kurama's first round and final round Dark Tournament fights and basically fused them together for both of them,
mm-hmm.
right? Where Kurama's deal was, in his first fight in the Dark Tournament, he fights the dude that basically says, oh, if you do anything to me, I've got a demon that's tracking your mother and he'll kill her. And that Kurama beats him by implanting the Death Seed in him while he's not paying attention. And that when he's when Kurama's fighting Karasu in the finals, he tries to use the Death Seed, and Karasu's like, ah, we're wise to your, you know, I'm wise to your plans or whatever. And then Kurama, Kurama turns into Yoko Kurama and runs out of time in that form. But the reason why he runs out of time was because he had the special juice from the item box, right, that Suzuki told him wasn't sure how long it was going to last for, so it had been narratively set up that Yoko Kurama transformation could have been on a timer. And here it's just, oh yeah, Kurama ran out of spirit energy, so he can't retain his Yoko form anymore. And you're just like, again, you wouldn't have any clue what was going on if you hadn't watched a Yu Yu Hakusho before.
Yeah, we also lose that, like, Yoko Kurama is like a totally... like separate personality from the human Kurama at this point.
It's just time to cover that.
And now in this version, it's just a transformation that comes out of nowhere. It's like, oh, here's my true demon form. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you went Super Saiyan for no reason. Cool. A fox, white fox dude now.
Well, and so, yeah, that's sort of like similar to how Genkai gets reduced to be the, you know, the Kung Fu movie sensei. Yeah. Kurama's transformation is just the one-off character that's got the, oh, well, my true form is, and like they just, you know, take the true form, do the thing, and it's over with. None of the justification or narrative punch behind it is there. It's just stuff that's kind of flying by like you're watching a 90-minute movie, you know.
Now, despite all that, this live-action fight between him and Karasu is actually very good.
Oh, yeah.
it's one of the highlights of the last truncated Dark Tournament fight is this one, and it's the closest to what we see in the anime. I really enjoyed that fight, and the CG actually looks pretty cool in it, too, with all the plants.
And I did like the fact, too, that, to its credit, the fact that the Death Tree or Death Seed works on Karasu, or Karasu, is it Karasu?
Karasu is
Karasu.
Yeah, either way. So the fact that it works actually narratively makes more sense, because Kurama was basically out of spirit energy, so he needed some low energy requirement move to be able to turn that fight around. But of course, in the original work, he can't do that because he's already used it before. So, like, the element of surprise is gone on that. So, obviously, it's not going to work. So, instead, they have to come up with this thing where Kurama manages to actually access his life energy. We didn't even get into life energy in this. That Kurama, you know, burns his life energy to summon one last crazy blood-sucking plant to, you know, finish Karasu off. you know, I thought it would have been cool if they'd done that, but I understand why they went the direction they did. And I think as far as this version of the story worked, that was absolutely the right choice. And I really did like the Hiei and Pui fight, at least the portions I could see. The lighting in that fight was way too low.
Yeah, I don't like that fight because you can barely see what's going on. Everything is dark and it's kicking up a lot of dust. And then they've got a lot of like the weird warping and particle effects around them. And it's just you can't tell what's going on.
You can't see anything. And they decided to make Bui's like battle aura thing be like dark smoke stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not like the big, crazy, bright green, you know, Broly energy looking stuff that it did in the anime.
Yeah, that anime episode where it has the finale between him and Hiei unleashing the Dragon of the Darkness Flame is one of the most visually spectacular, if not the most visually spectacular episode of the whole series, because it is so just incandescent. Just there's so many colors and so much motion and movement. It's truly something to behold. And then in this, we just get dark, dingy.
You can't see any of it. You can't even tell. Like, you're like, oh, is Bui like really strong? I can't really tell because I can't see what he's doing, you know?
Yeah, he did the thing where he takes off stuff and it falls down. It's really heavy, so he must be lighter. He did the, you know, the Rock Lee versus Gaara thing.
Yeah. And they're fighting in like a way smaller room, so like all the crazy flying around stuff that Bui does in the anime, he can't do any of that because there's no space to do any of it, and they're in this like dingy little storeroom, you know.
Well, anybody moving quickly in this looks kind of awkward.
Yeah, that's true. It's a hard effect to replicate in live action. I mean, some people have done it better than this, but it's tough, you know.
And you know, do you know who else they did dirty? Kuwabara.
Oh boy. Oh, yeah. Which, of course, I mean, like I said, it's like a running joke in Yu Yu Hakusho, but yeah, they went way overboard on this one.
I mean, frankly, Kuwabara is my favorite character in the show. So yeah, I think early on, I felt like they had nailed it. Like, I loved the first episode with the introduction of Kuwabara. I thought that was great. And leading into the second episode, it was still going well with him, like, discovering, like, his spirit powers and following Yusuke around. And then also
stalking him the whole episode. That was great. Like, I almost wish they had had him doing that in the original, because it would have been a great way to bring him up to speed with what was going on. Because mm-hmm. he can see everybody. He can see Botan and all that. Of course.
Yeah, exactly.
On the flip side, it does take away from the it would have taken away from the possibility of, you know, he meets Botan for the first time in the Genkai tournament arc and like immediately falls in love with her, which we had to like cut out for this too, which I thought was unfortunate, but I get it. You know, that was some very, very funny moments.
At least we got the Yukina moment.
We did get, like, the Yukina moment, at least.
I think we all would have rioted if we didn't get at least the Yukina moment. They knew that much. Yep,
but it was the box. Yeah, exactly. It was the checkbox. Yep.
But everything else about him in those last couple episodes, why even put him there? It's like he forgets his sword
once.
Yeah, he forgot his sword existed, and they're just like running away the whole time down the tunnels, and that's fine. But it would have been better if he just used his sword and they just did a fight scene.
I was really hoping that we'd get the Spirit Fly Swatter at least, but I guess without right? the Spiral Sword, that wasn't going to be feasible. Because we didn't show the sword enough to establish that Kuwabara can change the shape of the sword, too.
Yeah, we didn't get Spirit Sword get longer!
Yeah, exactly.
Also, the color of the Spirit Sword, it kind of clashes with his design now, because, you know, he's wearing the blue, but then his sword is also blue, as opposed to, like, when it was orange, it went well with his orange hair and the complementary of the orange and blue, blah, 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 blah. Like that,
yeah,
that
you get works the complementary well. Color things going. Oh, yeah, and by the way, I don't think Kuwabara goes to the same school as Yusuke in this now.
Yeah.
And also, apparently, everyone at Yusuke's school wears green, even though I feel like Yusuke wearing green was part of his delinquency, where he, like, refuses to wear the right color uniform, was actually, like, one of his minor acts of defiance.
It was. And they've totally gotten rid of that now. the things that they got rid of in this for reasons that we don't know, it's just baffling.
And we don't have the three teachers either. that were featured prominently in the early episodes, you know. No Mr. Tanaka, mm-hmm. no Iwamoto, and then the guy with the rodent teeth whose name is escaping me at the moment, but
I mean, yeah, that would be something you could put in the background and fans would recognize, but you
yeah.
There's so many bigger omissions when it comes to things that they've cut.
Oh, for sure.
Which, and that's what makes it frustrating to me, is they add this scene in the first episode that is there as fan service for people who have already seen it, and then ruins things for people who haven't seen the source material. And that's the stealing of the three treasures. And it's there to introduce, you know, Goki, Hiei, and Kurama. But in doing so, it kind of gives away all of their shticks. Like,
Hiei fast with sword, Kurama used the rose whip, and they even have Goki transform.
Yeah.
Which, you know, in the original, you don't even realize that Goki is a red Oni until Yusuke actually faces up with him.
Yeah, the problem is we don't know anything about them in the anime and manga until Yusuke shows up to fight all three of them at once. And just Goki fights him and beats the shit out of him. And Yusuke loses, and it's like, well, he still doesn't know what Kurama and Hiei can do. He has to take down Goki first. So it's still falling into that spirit detective thing where he's still like figuring out how to do things and getting special tools from Botan to overcome each of these challenges. And we don't get any of that because we have to introduce these characters real quick because we're going to get to them into the Dark Tournament by the next couple episodes.
And so the thing that really is such a bummer is that they, you know, oh, we got to cover the Dark Tournament arc because it's a favorite part. But really, all we did was just go straight to the Dark Tournament finals. Mm-hmm. We didn't really do the Dark Tournament, you know.
Yeah, they didn't do any of it, just the finals, which is mashed into the Rescue Yukina, like, few episode arc.
And it's basically also the same piece arc at that point, because it's yeah. the first time the team is together. So
yeah, because we have the bugs from the Saint Beast arc,
which is the only part of the Saint Beast arc that they used, which is unfortunate because there was a lot of other really fun stuff in the Saint Beast arc that we never were going to get to see in
I was going to do live action, and what they should have done to do this would be just, if it's still five episodes, just make the Saint Beast arc the end of the first part, or have Rescue Yukina be the end, and that way you get to introduce Toguro at the very end of it, and they do the fake out where Toguro loses on purpose for, you know, Sakio to win the bets and everything, and then we can lead into the Dark Tournament for the next season.
And in the original story, that was important because, you know, Sakio did not have the necessary capital to be the threat that he is in the Dark Tournament mm-hmm. until he teams up with Toguro to steal all of, I guess it's Tarukane. Yeah. I always had his Tarukane because of the Funimation dub, but Tarukane to steal all of Tarukane's money through the bets, mm-hmm. through the rigged fights, right?
Can we just say that Tarukane is perfectly cast in this. I don't know how they found that dude.
I can't believe that they managed to actually find somebody who looked almost exactly like his anime counterpart. It was ridiculous.
It was weird that they have him all over this adaptation.
And yet they've completely removed his need to actually be there.
Yes.
Because Sakio is already filthy, stinking rich and has all of the capital he needs to open the portal to the demon world.
Well, I'd say one of my favorite scenes in these late episodes is when Sakio goes to talk to the scientist down by the portal, and he's just like, "What do you need?" And the scientist is just like, "Money." It's like he doesn't need any sort of equipment or anything. He just needs money.
Just shove the yen directly into the machine.
Look, money is the root of all evil. If you're opening a portal to Demon World, that's what fuels it. Money. Yeah, but having so much emphasis with him, like, I don't mind it. I just, it's a weird choice with all of the things that they did cut and expedite to give him these extra scenes.
Although, you know, it's funny watching all this, some of these things, let me back that up. Watching the way that the Sakio Tarukane story happening at the same time as the Artifacts of Darkness, like, kind of got the gears in my head spinning about how you could have like rewritten the entire first arc such that we know later that Sakio and Tarakane both were, you know, moving in the worlds of like, you know, acquiring and selling, capturing demons, and being involved with various crimes, some of the supernatural variety. And so this idea that maybe with the exception of the Saint Beast arc, you probably could have tied the other arcs to them in some way, and that the Rescue Yukina arc could have been like the punctuation on like closing the door on this thing that all ties back to like Tarakane at the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much opportunity there. Like, again, Hye is one of those, because he is so tied to Yukina, that like it's, you can absolutely, you know, rewrite his whole first appearance in order to,
which you kind of had to, because it's like, as we've, I think we've discussed, there's like, there were some notes that came out, I guess, at some point, like some of Togashi's like early notes on the series.
Like he never intended for Hye to show up past that first appearance, and then,
which is pretty clear the way it's written. I mean, Hye is absolutely written as a one-off villain in his first appearance, but apparently Kurama was always meant to join the team, which is why the encounter goes down the way it does.
Yeah.
And I do think it's interesting too, just as a, just one final thought about that. Kurama doesn't show any of his powers in the original work until the Saint Beast arc. And I think that there may have been some waffling, perhaps, about whether or not Kurama was also going to need training to help restore his like demon powers or whatever. And then Togashi may have just opted not to do that later. Because when Kurama enters the fight against Hye originally and takes the sword in the stomach, and you realize he could have whipped out the rose whip or something to slap the sword away or something, it does make you wonder if the intent was for Kurama to even have any powers at that point. You know, it's hard to say for sure, but of course now we're talking about the old series and not the new series. So,
yeah.
But yeah, no, I mean, the whole thing is super rushed. And then of course, even at the goal to stick it on Hanging Neck Island, which is where the Dark Tournament, you know, takes place, but like, what was the significance of that now that they're not really in the Dark Tournament?
You know? That feels like turning the knife. It's like, really, we're already game. Yeah, we're already upset that it's not like the Dark Tournament. Why you gotta throw it on Hanging Neck Island?
Yeah,
again, it's a checkbox. It's an iconic thing from the source material, and I feel like another thing that gets confusing, and I think they were struggling because like, okay, we need to have Hye capture Keiko, but also we don't have any time for that. So let's just have
Elder
Toguro change into Hye to kidnap Keiko for no particular reason.
Oh, yeah. And actually, since we talked about episode 3 already, who was Yusuke training to fight? It wasn't Toguro. He was training to fight Hye.
Yeah.
And then he didn't actually fight Hye.
Yes.
I mean, he sort of did, but then they're like, whoa, 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 break it up, break it up. Yeah. You know, Keiko was not captured by Hye. Mm-hmm. Like, Hye, is this true? Yeah. Which, I mean, that's in character. Hye, like, not giving a non-answer is, like, so very Hye. Like, but still. Yeah. The way that those stories started to run into each other, the fact that the Artifacts of Darkness, or Treasures, or Three Treasures arc or whatever, the fact that that arc wasn't fully resolved even before we got into the sort of final dash to Toguro, also really started to make the whole thing fall apart, because you felt like you had all these plot threads that were just dangling. Some of them get resolved and some of them don't. And, you know, shoot, even getting back to kidnapping Keiko, I mean, Yusuke was going to have to go to the mansion to get, you know, to stop Sakio's plan. They already knew they were going to have to do that. So capturing Keiko was kind of pointless if the idea was for Toguro to draw Yusuke out there. He never was going to have to draw him there, right? It's like conflating Dark Tournament-esque plot points with the Rescue Yukina arc, thus making it kind of unnecessary.
Yeah, if his plan was always to have Toguro fight Yusuke in the pit, why throw him off with the whole Hye decoy to begin with?
yeah, it's just like now your compression is actually starting to confuse the narrative pretty significantly.
And it gets even more confusing when they get to the actual fight with Toguro, and Elder Toguro does a lore dump with like turning his hand into Genkai and like tries to explain that all of this happens because of Genkai and her relationship to Toguro and all this lore dump. You should care because of this. Okay, let's start fighting.
Right, which is great because he does something similar in the anime, but you, the viewer, already know the story. And so instead what you're getting is Elder Toguro's like super disrespectful version of the story where he's like making lewd comments about Genkai. And that's why younger Toguro gets mad and like vaporize punches him.
Yes.
You know, versus this one, he just gives like a pretty straightforward lore dump, and then younger Toguro just gets mad for no reason and punches him out of the you know, arena.
And there's a scene, maybe I missed it in this, but in the trailer, you get a shot of that demon that killed
all yeah, Kyra. No, it's in this.
It is in the show?
It's the beginning of the fifth episode. They show the flashback of Kyra eating everybody. Right.
Oh, I thought it was just like kind of out of context and you didn't actually see Kyra himself, but maybe I missed it.
Oh, well, they didn't explain it very well.
Okay. I was wondering if maybe that was a special effect that made it into the trailer and didn't make it into the show itself.
But yeah, either way, it was still like very poorly delivered that it's like, oh yes, in the past, Toguro and Genkai had a dojo where they trained people to fight demons, and then, you know, Kyren shows up and kills all their students, and Toguro can't stop them. They have to rematch in the dark tournament. Toguro beats him and then basically has them turn him into a demon.
I do wonder how much is on the cutting room floor with this. And if it was always intended to be 5 episodes, which is just a really strange order number.
Right.
I mean, the whole thing together is about 4 hours, which if it was planned to be a movie, if it was going to be a duology, because Japan is really big on those, like, think about like the Death Note duology or the Parasite or Assassination Classroom or, you know, so on and so on and so forth. They like to do those like part one and then a couple months later do a part two. And maybe they, at some point with a conversation with Netflix, they're like, no, this should be a series. But that's my conspiracy theory anyway. But I'm really curious because I haven't seen any production information for like how this all kind of came together.
It definitely feels that way with just the length of it and the way it's all paced. Like the first couple episodes definitely feel very coherent. Like they were meant to be one like film. Mm-hmm. And then the last three episodes are not coherent and just kind of like there. So it's like, oh yeah, we were going to make this cool movie and maybe we'd do a sequel. And then like, no, just make it a series of 5 episodes. Well, we weren't ready for that.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I hate to make comparisons to other, you know, live action adaptations of this sort, but when you look at like the order runs for something like, you know, One Piece, which is again adapting a large amount of material, but it just has a lot more breathing room to do it in because it's 8 episodes instead of 5. And, you know, you give this 3 extra episodes with the amount of compression that it has, and suddenly you can make a lot more stuff work.
Yeah, the live action One Piece did it very well, and it's, and even with cutting things out, it was able to bring other things in from later in One Piece to like make it all coherent as a series and something that's going to have a universe that's building on itself. Instead of just showing like just the East Blue stuff, they bring in other stuff from the universe so that it's all building on itself for the next season. And obviously we don't get any of that here because like you could, there's no way they're making another season of this.
Well, no, I mean, it's written like they're not really expecting there to be anything else. To my eye, it reads like sort of an admission of defeat that they can't get to the dark tournament by a normally paced show. Mm-hmm. We've thrown this all together because this is the best we can do.
there's no chance this will ever get a second season.
So we're not even going to try to write something that might do well enough to get a second season. I think it's a very critical way of looking at it, but when I watch the third, fourth, and fifth episode, I don't know how else to take it. Because when you look at the first two episodes, like we talked about, they are not without their problems. But if you had covered up through, you know, the Rescue Kina arc, maybe did it in 10 episodes, I think you could have pulled this off. And I think you could have gotten that second season and done your Dark Tournament. I really strongly believe that. The choreography is really good. The set design is really good. I don't think that the costume design was great, but I don't think that that would have been the thing that would have killed this show.
I agree, especially since they could have banked on One Piece being a success. So there's no way Netflix couldn't have been like nudging them to be like, you know, you could do it this way, but it just that just didn't happen. So instead we get it all rushed into just five episodes, and it's a shame because they really, I think had it been done right, they could have done a perfect first season and we would have gotten a perfect second season that could have done the Dark Tournament justice. And then we could, if it ends there, fine. If we want to go into Chapter Black, okay, we can do that then. Instead, we're left on a very weird, rushed ending here that even if they did make a second season, how are they going to pace it? It's going to be, what, Chapter Black in two episodes and then, like, straight into Ryzen and all them, and then it's over in three episodes?
I was joking that in the episode five of this season, Ryzen would show up in the post-credits.
Yeah,
I mean, it would not have fell out of sorts based on how we were going.
And sort of like getting back to my other point about like hyper compression really doing damage to the story itself. It's like, you know, Kuwabara being the one who ends up quote unquote dying against, you know, younger Toguro. You know, it loses a lot of punch when he's a character that you've spent only a few episodes with, you know. Yusuke was just only sort of starting to acknowledge him as a friend. He didn't really have these, you know, best buds through thick and thin sort of feel that you would have by the end of the Dark Tournament. You know, you'd had all this time. They'd been on, you know, Yusuke, you know, fighting to avenge him in the Genkai Tournament after Rando, like, you know, tears him up pretty good. And, you know, then you've got the fight, you know, against Byakko and Mei's castle where Yusuke is, you know, having to be held back from stepping in to save him multiple times when he then eventually does pull out, you know, Kuwabara does pull out the victory. And then Kuwabara, he sacrifices some of his own life energy to revive Yusuke after the Suzaku fight. You know, you get to the Rescue Kina arc where it's like a total like buddy cop, like, you know, raid where they're busted in there, just kicking everybody's butt, like, you know, back-to-back, you know, back-to-back spy movie-looking business with Botan also getting some decent screen time during that little mini-arc. And then, like I said, you get all the Dark Tournament stuff. Like, so you get through all of that, and then you get the death fake-out with Kuwabara. It is so effective with all of that background, all that history built up. Here, you get this guy who goes, oh no, his friend, rival, might be dead. And then you don't even keep the thing in the note in where Toguro wants to lose so badly that he faked killing Kuwabara because he's not so bad of a guy. He doesn't actually want to kill Kuwabara, but he wants Yusuke to beat him, and that he misses Kuwabara's vitals on purpose. That was the explanation in the original. And this one, it's just, well, you know, Yukina's got healing powers and she got to Kuwabara fast enough so he doesn't die. Okay. It just takes a lot of the oomph out of it. Like, any of the stuff about, like, Toguro being a properly conflicted character really feels like it has to get papered over because there's not enough time. There's not enough time to develop his villain character. You know, even if you had the full five episodes for Toguro, I think it would have been a struggle. But when you basically have two and a half, there's no chance. There's no chance of getting that.
And I think on top of the time, We do get plenty of characterization for Kuwabara, and I think Kuwabara is actually really good in the live action, The problem for me in the live action of the suit, the chemistry of the duo is Yusuke. And it's because we get a Yusuke in this version who is not like the one in the manga or the anime. He's lacking a lot of his, like, or pretty much all of his goofy side. There's none of the joking, hilarious, weirdo Yusuke. There's none of the pervy Yusuke for obvious reasons. There's just none of the, like, really fun stuff and the comedy in Yusuke in this. He's just this, you know, this guy, you know, always kind of looking down, very serious, and he's always got something to do. He just doesn't really shine as a character in this, despite being the main character.
And yeah, it's a great example, you know, if Yusuke coming back to life was presented as he can come back to life if he becomes Spirit Detective. If that was presented to OG Yusuke, there would have been some cracks coming from that. Like,
yeah,
he at least would have been making jokes, and he definitely would have rejected it in a more emphatic way than the way he does in the live action. And you're right. I mean, the goofy Yusuke is like totally lost. I mean, Yusuke having no respect for authority is manifested in multiple ways in the original work. He's angry. He's always making fun of people, you know, and that works to make him this really like energetic character. And yeah, there's instead you've just got this very serious, dour version of Yusuke in this story. Feels like a total departure from what we get in the original. Just like very lively, joking, but also just absolutely furious human being.
I did like in the funeral photo in the live action, much like in the manga, he's doing like his delinquent face, which like yeah. That's one thing that the anime kind of flubbed a little bit.
This is true, yeah.
Yeah, at least in this version, we did get his, like, weird, just off face, and it's definitely a good comedic moment.
Also, he's smoking on the roof again in this, which he was in the manga, but not in the anime. He said he's, like, eating some butterscotch candy, which I'm not sure why anyone would have had any issue with.
I think because of the anime is just because it was aimed at kids in Japan, so it's like they can't show the character smoking, so they had to remove that.
Well, especially if you look at the art style of the early episodes, it really seemed like they were trying to hit the younger kid demographic.
Yep.
And then the character designs really start to look more like the manga that was further it goes. And, of course, also the way the violence is depicted also starts looking more like the manga also.
But even if people want to, like, criticize us for saying that there's too much serious Yusuke in this, the whole reason serious Yusuke works in the anime and the manga is because we don't see serious Yusuke until the time skip and the training to go into the dark tournament. We only see the silly idiot Yusuke all the way up through the Rescue Yukina arc. He's constantly failing at things. He's only getting by and winning by pure luck in almost every circumstance. Kuwabara is more capable than him at the Genkai's tournament section.
Despite being significantly weaker.
Like exactly.
The whole thing about Yusuke is you have this sense of his untapped potential, because as deeply unserious as he is, when he'd get like his lucky punch or lucky hit in, it would absolutely clobber whoever it would hit. Like, yes, Yusuke gets lucky that the spirit gun can bounce off the mirror to hit Hiei in the back in the original. But on the other hand, the spirit gun still had to have enough punch for that to be a one-shot victory, right? So you know he had the capacity to be more capable than he is, and then Genkai finally whips him into shape, you know.
Yeah, and we lose all that here, obviously. So yeah. He's just serious the whole time. Whereas in the original, you have the whole scene of him facing off with Toguro after the fake out defeat at Rescue Yukina, and Toguro comes back to challenge him at the dark tournament and scares the crap out of him by showing him just 30% of his power, and then he shows up at Genkai's like, I need to get stronger, I only have 2 months, and then it just cuts to 2 months later, and it's like, there's a totally, he looks totally different. He acts totally different from that point forward. He's more mature and more like respectful. He still like cracks at Genkai and calls her grandma and everything. And that is still here in the live action. It's just not in the subtitles except, for some reason.
Except the subtitles translated as master. It's like, is it? Oh, yes. Translator's note, Basan means master. Yes.
Yeah, I'm listening to it. It's like, I know what those words mean. You're lying to me.
Like, Basan really is sort of like a, even though there's a san in there, my understanding is it's still like sort of an informal way of saying it's kind of just calling her like granny or whatever.
Yeah. So yeah, it's like that we get some of that at the very end of the live action. Like just the joking, like, ah, granny. Check the blocks. But we never had any of that up to that point. It's whole reversal.
It's kind of like how, you know, again, talking about like they crammed a whole bunch of stuff in at the very end of the last episode where it's like, oh, hey, Yukina mentions to Hiei that she's looking for her brother. And then he pulls out the Hiroseki stone. And, you know, in the original, he had to go back to Demon World to get that back, if I remember correctly. Like,
yeah, there's a whole thing where he had to go back to the village and get one and like be ostracized and not be part of them, and it's like we don't get any of that here, obviously.
He just has it, and then he's like, "Oh, but it's not me,
right?"
And you're like, "Oh, come on! Like, we're really gonna do this? Like, we did it? You can't do that with this being so compressed." Like,
yeah.
And then you know you've got the shot at the end where like Kuwabara's, we can't hear what he's saying, but he's macking on Yukina. He's probably trying to give his best. His best lines, and then Hiei walks up and he's like, don't talk to her, you'll sully her. And you're like, oh, so this, not only is this Hiei being protective of Yukina, this is actually the first instance in the live action of Kuwabara feuding with Hiei.
And
you realize that's like such a key aspect of their character interactions. We don't get it until like the last couple seconds of the show. It's like, yeah, check the box. We did it. We did the thing that we said we'd do.
They did check the box once earlier, like when they're going to get on the boat. And like, I think Kuwabara makes a comment about Hiei being too short or something. And it's like, oh, check the box.
Yeah, check the box. He made the short comment. Oh, Yusuke gets the spirit orb and shoots the big spirit gun into the sky. Check the box, you know. You got to do the thing where Toguro extinguishes the spirit orb by spirit gun by screaming at it that one time. Okay, to be fair, that was awesome. I'm really glad they managed to keep that one in there.
Yeah,
that works. He goes 100% and just makes the spirit gun not be there anymore. Like
the 100% looked weird in this.
Yes. Oh, it looks so weird. Especially,
I mean, it's supposed to look weird, but it didn't look the right kind of weird.
It looks very much like the actor's head has been photoshopped onto that CGI body, which I guess is what happened, but still.
But they should have, if they're going to go.
The goofy pointy shoulders that didn't make any sense. I know that like that is anatomically incorrect, but it was so iconic and part of 100% Toguro's silhouette. To lose the goofy spiky shoulder thing, why get rid of that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like if they're gonna show 100% Toguro on him looking weird and demonic body looking thing, just give him the gray skin.
They didn't even give him the gray skin.
Then at least it might look a little bit more natural, and then instead of, like you said, just a head plopped on this weird body.
At least make the head and the body the same color.
Yeah. They did that too. I will say, to give them credit, the effect of him burning up into like a husk, I thought that was the best representation of him being like completely tapped out and like, no, like, you know, like he burns himself up so significantly that he basically is just, he's just a burnout husk. The way that they visually represented that was as good as I could have ever imagined it. Like, even the anime wasn't really sure how they wanted to make that look. You know, they made him like turn all white and he kind of like shatters a little bit like he's made of glass or something. But him sort of looking more like charcoal, I thought actually made way more sense visually.
And then they had the gall to show us the scene with him and Genkai in hell, like, or on his way to hell.
Yeah,
and it's like
has no punch without their weight. Yeah,
there's no punch of it here. It's like for people who know it's that's in the original and know what it is, it's like, okay, this looks beautiful, and then they did it well, but why is it here? Because it makes no sense here.
Well, you know what? You know, I was just realizing, you know what was the big scene that they really needed to have in there that wouldn't have taken a bunch of time? Would have been to include that scene that Genkai is talking about when she realizes that Toguro cannot accept his mortality. Mm-hmm. When, you know, he says, like, you know, I can't believe, you know, and think about it, their lives are just a cool joke, you know, cruel joke. You know, here just long enough to realize what we want, but not long enough to actually, you know, be able to hold on to it or whatever. And, you know, and then, you know, Genkai adds, like, from that moment, I realized, like, he was a lost cause. I should have realized that he was a lost cause. Because, again, that would have required that Genkai not immediately die after training Yusuke for the first time.
Mm-hmm. And they could have kept that in here. They could have had a scene with him showing down with Genkai like it happens in the Dark Tournament of the anime. If I could have still been in here, and it could have been short in the end of episode 3, just showing him like showing up, and then they have a conversation in the dojo before he kills her, and they can just do the whole thing where, you know, she's like talks about him doing his thing, and he talks about her like giving up the chance to be truly strong and all of that. But it's not here, and it could have been, and it would have made it make sense at the end.
Well, because part of it is this. In the manga and the anime, Toguro basically has three primary forms. He's got his 30% form, his 80% form, and his 100% form. And what we basically get is his 100% form that looks more like his 80% form in the live action. And I think that they were trying to hide that form by not showing it in the Genkai fight, because they're implying that he had to go 100% to kill Genkai. But in the original work, he just goes 80%, because they're saying that, like, yeah, Genkai without the spirit orb is not worthy of bringing out his 100%. And so we see his 80% the second time in his fight, the beginning of his fight with Yusuke. And then Yusuke is like, okay, yeah, I need to actually go all out. And then he's like, okay, now I can go 100%. And then you get the goofy shoulders and the gray and the iconic, you know, the iconic silhouette of 100% Toguro, which we've just completely lost here, right?
Yeah, but in this version, they're so cavalier with the spirit orb that you don't really know what it is or what the stakes are and what, you know, what it means to Genkai. So it's like they could have just shown 30% Toguro taking her out in this version, because it could have just been assumed that she gave all of her power away.
We don't really have enough time with the live action to really fully grasp what the power scale really is. And I mean, we know it's toned down. You can tell from from watching the anime versus this, that to make this all work, they had to ratchet the power scaling back, you know, which I appreciate, because that also works better in live action. But yeah, the problem is that it basically invalidates the need for a spirit orb, because, again, he's still training to fight Hiei at this point. She gives him the spirit orb because she knows he's going to fight Toguro. But at that point, I mean, why bother, really? Because we haven't established at this point that Toguro is basically unbeatable at Yusuke's current level, right? I mean, like, you have to know that already to know that the spirit orb being handed over to him is meaningful.
And we see a little bit of a skirmish with Yusuke and Genkai, but we don't get that feeling that she's all that powerful from that fight in the live action.
Yeah, I think
so. As a result, when Toguro, you know, shockingly beats up an 80-year-old woman, it's like, oh, I can't believe. Yeah,
it doesn't mean anything. You know, I thought I was joking, but now I think I'm serious. That I think that them cutting the little cutaway that they did during the Suzaku fight, where Genkai is teaching Yusuke to block spirit energy, mm-hmm. and she like goes like, careful, this could kill you, and like blows him away like instantly. It actually does this great job of also quickly establishing Genkai is extremely powerful. Like, this is a thing that she does to blow Yusuke away, because she's just trying to show him how to block quote-unquote basic energy attacks. Mm-hmm. Implication being that she can pump out this incredible amount of spirit energy on a whim, right? And then if you would have included that, you would have got, okay, Genkai is really strong. Like, yes, she blows Yusuke and Kuwabara back when they first arrive, but it's like kind of underwhelming, mm-hmm. you know. That was probably supposed to be spliced from that shot from the beginning of the Genkai tournament, when those like two mountain men guys like, you know, are yelling about how they didn't get the, you know, draw the right lots, that their spirit energy should have changed if they were actually strong enough to go through the training. Mm-hmm. And then she like throws them back. And that's like Yusuke goes, oh, whoa, she threw those guys away with her mind. Like, OK, maybe this old lady, you know, has got something. Mm-hmm. But like, again, it's all the whole thing with Genkai is so compressed. We don't really get any of that. So, yeah, it's just this, you get the sense if you were going in and just watching this without any background, you look at Genkai's character as this is the kung fu master who knows all the techniques, but can't really execute them anymore. Mm-hmm. And so she's passing them down to the young tough to carry on the martial arts legacy. More so than it being, this is a very powerful, still very powerful character, who has a lot to teach the main character about himself and about power in general.
And it's unclear what her relationship is with Spirit World in this also, because it's just, you know, they just get sent there for training, like, and she's ready for them.
Yeah.
Getting back to the Toguro thing, I also think it's a shame that, because it would have been very easy to also include that just two sentence exchange between Koenma and younger Toguro when he's showing up in hell, you know, and Koenma's like, you know, in light of your previous good deeds, we could go for a lenient, and Toguro's just like, nope, worst hell. Just walks off. Like,
it's gonna be the worst hell, and you know, Koenma's like, I can't argue with somebody who's got a death wish, and senses him to super hell or whatever. Yeah, I think they should have included that, because instead what you get is Koenma essentially talking about that exchange, mm-hmm. rather than just showing it.
Yeah. And then it cuts a snake way.
Yes. And Toguro goes to King Kai's plan to learn the Kaioken and the Genki Dama, I presume.
I think that's how it works.
Yeah. So yeah, it's just kind of... it takes a bunch of elements from disparate storylines, smashes them together with variable effectiveness, but creates a lot of confusion, yeah. I think. I can only imagine what this would have been like to experience as somebody who knows nothing about Yu Yu Hakusho. I feel like it can't possibly make any sense. You know,
I think it might make sense, like I said, up through around the middle of it, and up through in some of the Genkai stuff, because like you said, that's kind of a trope with the master teaching the students. But then once it starts getting into like the final fights, and they're just fighting these new characters who showed up out of nowhere, and they're doing transformations and moves that you've never seen before and were never built up to or introduced. And then we're fighting with Toguro, and he's doing his transformation, and they're lore dumping about what Toguro's backstory is and why any of this is significant at all. And it's just moving very fast and introducing a lot of stuff instead of giving any bit time to cook.
Actually, you could have done some stuff like hinted at the fact that Hiei might have had this technique before. Like when he's fighting Yusuke, maybe he like almost takes the bandages off, and then Kurama stops him. He's like, Kurama says something to him like, Hiei, don't you, like, you can't use, like, what are you doing using a technique like that?
Yeah,
you know, that you can only use once, you know, or something like that on somebody you shouldn't even be fighting, or somebody like something, yeah. like that, you know what I mean? Like, you, like, if you're gonna have it hyper compressed, you need to be throwing in some lines that will make it make sense to people who don't know the background, even if it means putting it in a new a newer, simpler context, you know.
Like one example that I thought was really well handled was that there's a whole like subplot where there's this one guy that's wants to help Yukina escape for whatever reason.
Yes.
And in the original, he just gets shot. But in this, he's killed by Elder Toguro, which first of all establishes Elder Toguro as this shithead that you really don't like. Second of all, show some of his power so you know what he can do. And thirdly, really puts that extra bit of oomph when it's Kuwabara that has to fight him, and he's the one that's rescuing Yukina, and you get that extra sense of, like, this is almost like a repeat for her of, like, oh, no, somebody else who is trying to rescue me is now going to go up against this guy.
If anything, like, Kevin makes a good point. That's, like, even more effective than it was in the original. Because the other thing, too, is Yukina's not even with them. at the time. Right. They're just communicating telepathically at that point.
Yeah.
I actually think in this version, we get the best version of Elder Toguro, because he's just kind of, you know, just weird and there and just creepy in the other versions. But in this, he's like, has an actual characterization, and he's like very animated and very evil. And he's, and when he's chasing down Kuwabara and doing stuff, he's making all these, you know, faces and making fun of them and antagonizing and terrorizing. And we don't get any of that from Elder Toguro in any other version. So I think the actor really killed it.
Yeah. And as you pointed out, Lux, it seems like they're maybe reusing some assets from Parasite for his
weapons. Absolutely. When his arm turned into the blade thing with like on sinewy, like, you know, it's just whipping around. It's like, yeah, that's definitely Parasite arm.
Miki?
And you also get a little bit of that too in the, like, his first fight with the student who's possessed or is turning into a demon, which that fight is awesome. I love that fight in the first episode. But yeah, when the, like, the student's like starting to transform and his arm also kind of like turns into a you know, organic blade, it kind of gives those Parasite vibes.
I could see that. I mean, I don't know if Shirogumi did effects for this, but I would not be surprised just because they're all over everything, especially with robot products. So
yeah, I have not looked that deeply. I know the editor of this is the same editor as the Parasite movies.
Okay.
And then the cinematography, the reason everything looks beautiful, I think, is the guy who did cinematography, Kosuke Yamada. Actually, I do like a lot of the stuff that I saw when I looked him up. And he even did the cinematography in Shin Godzilla. So it's like, and I really love the camera work in Shin Godzilla. It's one of the few things about the movie I like. So
there's some great camera work in this also. I mean, just
exactly. Other than the really dark buoy fight. Head,
like,
yeah, people were joking about it, but actually I thought the camera work on this. Oh yeah. You're talking about when he's actually dead. I was thinking about when he got hit. I mean, some people were making jokes about it, but I actually thought the way the camera work and the shot of him getting hit was really good too.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I love that shot. It's brutal.
It is brutal. I mean, he looks super dead from that hit. So yeah.
So I think ultimately, like, it's kind of, it's just frustrating.
It's frustrating. Yeah.
There's a lot to like here, but it's if it weren't for the main characters looking bad and the incredible compression from a scripting perspective, you know, it would,
in the sense it had the ingredients to be something special.
Yeah, exactly.
And then we kind of didn't felt, it feels like we were kind of denied that because of, to me, it's executive decision making, because I mean, how else do you end up with some of the decisions made, like being five episodes? I mean, surely that wasn't the creative team's, mm-hmm. you know, now the costume design might have been. To which I have to say, y'all get your eyes checked and don't look good at all. But again, like I said, is not convincing as the costume design was, that in and of itself wouldn't have been enough to sink this show. It really came down to the story compression just being a bit too much. You just lose, because even if they had made it less confusing in the end, it still felt like you lost a lot of the Yu Yu Hakusho flavor. Because everything was reduced to having to be sort of the bog standard versions of all those stories, like the sensei who gets killed by the main bad guy, like the, you know, the guys joining the team with no real consternation, you know, the main character finding his resolve to fight, you know, all that stuff is so rushed that you don't really get the Yu Yu Hakusho spin on it, mm-hmm. you know, which I think was one of the things that made Yu Yu Hakusho so special. It wasn't so much about the broad strokes points. It was about how it went about doing it all, you know?
Yeah. And I don't know if it, there's maybe a problem with a one size fits all attitude with adaptations, of somebody being like, well, it's this this many chapters, therefore it should be this much runtime or something like that, based on, I don't know, Rurouni Kenshin did it this way or something like that, or what. But like for this particular story, that does not fly with as much variety as there is in that series. I mean,
yeah. And you can see why in the original anime that so many of these one-on-one fights got their own episodes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people look back on some of that stuff and say, oh gosh, the pacing was so slow on some of these fights, but it really did a good job of putting a lot of focus on individual characters at times when they needed it to really shine. You know, there's just so much happening in those last three episodes, and you're jumping, there's two simultaneous fights going on in practically every episode going to the end, and it just feels like, it just feels so frenetic. And not in a good way. It feels like you're missing a lot of stuff,
mm-hmm.
you know? Yeah, it all just feels too fast. And then you've got, like, things that feel like they were just straight up, like, mistakes in the writing. So, you know, you get to the end. You get into the end where they're fighting Toguro, and, you know, the portal to Demon World is open, the insects are coming out, Koenma makes this, you know, force field to keep them from escaping, and we are immediately told that he can't hold it forever. So he goes to Sakio to tell him to stop. Like, he directly goes to Sakio to tell him to, you know, take the portal down. And Sakio's like, no way, right? And so, like, okay, we'll bet on whether Toguro wins the fight or not. And so the ante here is Koenma takes the barrier down if Toguro wins, or Sakio closes the portal if Toguro loses. But we were already told that Koenma can't keep this barrier up anyway, so how is this an acceptable ante for acceptable wager for Sakio? Like, Sakio's doing all the risk here. Koenma's doing no risk. Sakio's a gambler. Why would he accept this gamble? Right? Like, he's a seasoned gambler and a smart one, supposedly, as well. So, and then they go, and then Koenma even goes, oh, that's not enough, because you could just restart this program. It's fine. I'll kill myself and destroy this project if Toguro loses. Oh, wow. So what does Koenma have to do in response to the upping of the ante? Apparently nothing. Just take the barrier down that he's going to run out of energy to hold up on anyway. Okay.
Speaking of wonky rules, I had the thought, like, with, you know, how cavalierly Koenma brings Yusuke back to life as a spirit detective, seemingly at a whim. When Kuwabara gets, quote, killed, end quote, by Toguro, like, what's stopping Koenma from just, like, revolving door him right back into that fight?
Yeah. That's a good point. That's a good point, because, we're not given any input. That somebody coming back to life is really a once in a blue moon thing, or that there's like rules or regulations to it. I mean, this is part of that whole thing about the spirit world bureaucracy that actually plays well into the story, where they're like, yes, theoretically you probably could just, you know, hand wave anybody back to life, but the bureaucratic rules of spirit world make that extremely difficult, if not impossible, to do.
That's where having, you know, two volumes of Yusuke having to earn his way back to the world of the living kind of, like, come into play.
Yes, that bringing somebody back to life is a big deal.
I do mourn the loss of the part where, in the original, we get Yusuke in Kuwabara's body.
Yes.
And that's so iconic, and it's sad that we don't have that here.
Yes. The, I've got to do something that, that Keiko will immediately know it's me. Oh, dear.
Maybe that's why that's not in there.
Okay, I'll admit that maybe there's reasons.
That was sexual assault.
Yeah, well, Yusuke does that a lot, doesn't he?
Well, I thought it was interesting that the anime chose to downgrade that to a skirt flip, where that actually was something that we saw him do in the manga before. Mm-hmm. So theoretically, for the viewer, that would actually connect more anyway. Mm-hmm. So, like, yeah, the chest grab was, like, totally over the top, totally unnecessary in the manga. Like, Yusuke, what are you doing? Also, the other thing, which I believe was an anime only thing. I don't think they did it in the manga, but in the episode when Kuwabara is trying to pass that test in the beginning, and Yusuke possesses that one random schoolgirl and beats the crap out of all the guys that are trying to stop Kuwabara. That
yes.
scene is so good. I love that scene so much. Just, don't you know there's a test today, moron?
Yeah, so yeah, see, I mean, it's just talking about losing the goofy Yusuke. We just don't have him here, and it's sad.
It is.
We could have had 5 episodes of that, but
I would have been
amazing
if we had gotten 5 45 to 55 minute episodes of his ordeal coming back to life. I mean, like, to me, that is the only thing that we have not really gotten a proper adaptation of. If we had gotten that, I would have been over the moon. But I recognize that Yu Yu Hakusho's property revolves around the entire team, not just Yusuke. And specifically, it revolves around Hiei and Kurama. Yeah,
yes, the entire team, excluding Kuwabara. Yeah.
I mean, it's a total pipe dream. You'd have to have somebody who is such a embarrassingly, like, ridiculous Yu Yu Hakusho fan pull some insane strings to ever get that arc fully adapted. You know, basically it would have to be me. So we would have to give me $50 million or something.
Yeah. I mean, we got a new OVA just within the past, you know, handful of years, but it's a Hiei and Kurama OVA, isn't it?
Yes. How surprising.
Yep.
Of course, that was mostly because that one chapter hadn't been adapted was a Hiei and Kurama chapter, so it was a totally unnecessary one that Togashi, like,
put spite wrote.
Yeah, wrote out of spite, yeah.
I feel like at this point, the only thing we haven't really talked about is what we've seen as far as the fandom reaction to this thing. Like, yes. Okay, so if this was made for the fandom, how has the fandom reacted to it? And before we started recording, we did talk a little bit about this, but I mean, just in, like, Facebook groups that I've followed for quite a while now, just because, you know, I'm a Yu Yu Hakusho fan, you know, it's always been pretty chill, and we all just love Yu Yu Hakusho. And then this comes around and everyone sees it, and now there's all out war. Yeah, like you said, it's become very saddeningly toxic, where there's a lot of people who love this and who are defending it. I'm not sure why, because there's definitely things that we've talked about for the last almost 2 hours that are wrong with it, and it's valid to talk about those things, and there's things about this to like. But then there seems to be a very large portion of the fan base who are very vocal about only supporting this and saying it's the best thing ever, and maybe we'll get a second season. I don't know if that happens to be because
it doesn't matter what anyone
says. We're not going to get that, but I don't know if that's just because we've had such a drought of any sort of content for so long and people want more, or just people just, I don't know. I don't understand it.
Yeah. Both the arguing and the defense. I agree. I think I could see defending this on some merits, but, like, yeah, the full-throated defense is the stuff that I don't really get. Like, people saying, oh, yeah, no, it's really good. I'm like, I mean, there's, like, aspects of it in isolation. If you already have all of the context already that you can call good, but it's a terrible thing to come into completely, like, uninitiated. It's like, you know, like you said, maybe half of it you can get through. You can at least make sense of without the context. But, you know, as far as a complete work, no way. It's like your head's spinning by the end of it, right? And I don't think it does a very good job of adapting it, because it's just taking the impossible task of, you know, compressing 60 episodes of content into 5, mm-hmm. you know, 10 if you want to be generous talking about actual runtime, right? But, you know, yeah, I think all in all, it's not very good on the whole. I think there's things I like about it, but it's not very good on the whole. But yeah, then of course, mostly I think it's just kind of our current internet zeitgeist now, where it's like people can't just disagree about things. You can't just say, oh, I liked some aspects of it, or, oh, your mileage may vary, I enjoyed it, but I would say it probably wasn't that great. Sort of, it's like, no, people have, you have to fall into one of two camps. A piece of media comes out, you either have to love it or you despise yes. it.
Yeah, you they know. Make it like a part of their yeah. entire identity. It's like, I have to love this, and anybody who doesn't love it is the enemy.
Well, yeah. it's like, yeah, oh, if you don't love this and you're not a Yu Yu Hakusho fan, it's like, I don't know, if you're a Yu Yu Hakusho fan, I don't know how you love this. You know what I mean?
It does feel exactly. like a 50% plus or minus. So if it's if you give it like a 51%, it's the greatest thing ever. If you give it a 49%, it's the worst thing ever.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, the closest for me that I can think of, and this is not anime, but in terms of the problems with this, this reminds me a lot of The Last Airbender. And that's a movie that people despised. They thought it was just like, they would put it on the yeah. worst movie lists of all time. And that was one where like, no, I think there are good things about this, but it's highly compressed and it loses a lot of that context. And honestly, like in the realm of bad adaptations, like that's where I would put this. It's not a Saint Seiya where it wastes the whole movie doing stuff that doesn't matter. It's it's not a Ghost in the Shell where it doesn't understand the source material it's adapting slavishly. It's not a Dragon Ball Evolution where you get the feeling that nobody involved with the production had ever looked at the source material. But it is messy. So.
Yeah,
you're not the first person I've seen compare it to Avatar either. It's I think that is the best comparison from what we've seen.
It's pretty apt, I think, because it's a lot about what is wrong with the final product is about what you lose through compression. And I think that is the vast majority of what doesn't work about this Yu Yu Hakusho. I mean, I've said it a half dozen times already, but you know, really though, it's the take home, I think.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, if you're a fan of Yu Yu Hakusho, I wouldn't say avoid it like the plague. I think that there's some fun stuff in there, and there's a couple of recontextualization things. In fact, frankly, I think if one is into the idea of like fan fiction, it's like it is a fertile ground of giving new ideas for like recontextualizing aspects of the older story, maybe give people some ideas as to how they might rewrite it themselves. You know, I think that it's an interesting take on Yu Yu Hakusho. I don't think that it really completely nails it for the most part. I think it doesn't. But there's a lot there. Even despite all of that, there are some worthy things in there. Some good scenes, excellent choreography, good set design. Thought the sound design was great. I didn't mention yet that I think that the way that the attack effects looked was actually really great. And that's the thing that usually doesn't come out very good in live action. But the way the spirit gun would hit people in this looked great. I mean, it had the blowback that the really meaty blowback that you really wanted to see, you know, when Toguro gets thrown through the wall and you know he's not going to be harmed by it. But like, it looks like it hit really hard, mm-hmm. which of course when he just stands back up like nothing happened, it's like very similar to, you know, when he stands up from that big spirit gun, you know, in the finals. Obviously the scale's not the same, but we're not working on the same scale. We've established that already, right? Similarly, even though I don't love the color of Kuwabara's spirit sword, the actual look of it, the sparking energy or whatever, looks good. I just wish that they'd actually done all the, you know, shape-shifting stuff with the sword. I thought that was one of my favorite things about Kuwabara's, you know, creativity being expressed through this goofy weapon of his, right? You know, you couldn't see it very well, but the flames of the Dragon of the Darkness flame looked really good. I thought too that the Rose Whip, they could have goofed that up pretty badly, and they actually did a pretty good job with that, as well as the weird heat-seeking carnivorous plants that Yoko Kurama summons. They looked pretty good. They looked like weird evil living plants, like you'd like. And the way Karasu's invisible bomb energy looked really convincing too. And I liked the fact that they chose not to reveal the bombs like they did in the anime, because it looked fine in the anime, but you knew it wasn't going to look right in the live action. So I thought they made a great decision not to try to depict those goofy cartoony looking bombs in the live action. Like, those were good decisions, I thought. There's a lot of good visual decisions outside of the character design.
This would make a great AMV.
Yes. Absolutely. Yes,
100%.
Fantastic AMV content. That's a great point.
Yeah, I gotta echo all of that. I think everything that works in this is visually perfect. Like, from the cinematography, and we've been going on and on about this, the cinematography, the fight scenes, just the way everything is presented, everything looks beautiful. I like it. Yeah, it's kind of that robot communications, like, washed out colors a little bit, but everything still just, it looks great. And I love the way the show looks and how it plays out. It's really unfortunate that the storyline gets lost in the mix and is so rushed. And yeah, we've talked enough about that. So yeah, I like what you said, Kevin, about how you're either 49% is the worst thing ever, or 51% is the best thing ever. I think if I was going to fall on an actual rating for this, it would be right at 50%. It's mid. There's nothing very strongly about it that I really, really hate, but there's also nothing strongly about it that I really, really love. There's little bits of it that I love, and there's little bits of it that I hate, but the overall package is just mid, and that's unfortunate.
I think that's right. I mean, reflecting on my own feelings about it, I was not like angry or upset at the end of it. I was a little disappointed. And yeah, I think mid's a good word for it, because, you know, I felt like I was a little disappointed, but I got to the end of it. I could have been really disappointed, but on the other hand, going in, knowing it was only going to be 5 episodes, knowing that, you know, we were somehow going to get to Toguro that quickly and resolve it apparently, you know, I had anticipated a lot of the story problems, knowing how much needed to be compressed. And so really, I was only a little disappointed, because I felt like going in, we were presented with an impossible writing task. Mm-hmm. And so I think that they did a decent job with the scenario in front of them. I don't think it was overall a great final product, but it was about as good as you could imagine a 5-episode adaptation of Yu Yu Hakusho that's supposed to get all the way to the end of the Dark Tournament could ever be, mm-hmm. you know. Like I said, maybe an extra line here or there, or a scene cut here or there to improve the readability for people who have never consumed Yu Yu Hakusho before. Yeah, you could make that argument, but at that point, we're kind of splitting hairs, because the biggest problem can't be resolved with clever writing.
Yeah, and like ultimately, I think that that's where this falls apart, aside from being kind of disappointing, is just that it's not something that can really serve as a entryway for a new audience. Whereas something like Alita or One Piece or Kenshin or the Parasite movies, like all of those, I think can be a perfectly good, like, check this out, and they are good into and of themselves, and they might get people into the source material, but otherwise they can come from the source material and go to those versions and still, you know, come away satisfied. And this, it's more of like a weird curiosity for people who are already fans.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And then I think that most fans will probably end up watching this, because there's been so little Yu Yu Hakusho content over the last 20 years that, I mean, it's sort of like a why not? I watched it. I didn't think it was great, but you know what? It was more Yu Yu Hakusho. That was nice to see the characters in action again. I wish it would have been a little better, but got to see more Yu Yu Hakusho.
Yeah, exactly.
A twist on it.
After so much time, it was nice to actually see the characters again and see what they did with the characters. Like I said, there's a lot of things in this that I did love, and a lot of that had to do with the things that they got right about the characters and then how they were presented. But then it all just kind of fell apart in the story. So it's the give and take of it. Will I ever watch this again? Probably not.
Yeah. Same. You know, one of the things though that I thought was kind of funny was that for the brief time that it was doing its Netflix zeitgeist thing of the, this exists for 2 weeks and then everyone forgets about it.
Mm-hmm.
Was that people were posting all these GIFs and video clips from the anime, and it was like, oh man, people are talking about Yu Yu Hakusho on Twitter. I never thought I'd see the day, you know, because by the time Twitter was like a big deal, like Yu Yu Hakusho had completely faded from the public consciousness. Every now and again, you'd see a TikTok or like an Instagram reel that would be some totally wild scene from Yu Yu Hakusho that you hadn't thought about in a while. But like, yeah, there for about a week or two, it was like, oh man, Yu Yu Hakusho's talking the town again. It's like, man, it's been a while, mm-hmm. You know.
And there actually, it was kind of weird. It's like a lot of people too, who I think totally skipped this altogether because they heard people who were saying that wasn't good and said, you know what, the anime is on the streaming services too. I'll just go watch the anime. And I've seen a lot of people just starting watching the anime and liking it. It's like, okay, cool. It's still got people to watch the anime. Cool.
If that's the end result, then I'd say it was worth it because, more people watching the original 1990s Yu Yu Hakusho anime, like, love it. That show is great. People who have not watched it should go out and watch it right freaking now because it's basically one of the best shonen battle series ever. Arguably one of the best anime ever. So, you know, there's that. I don't want to hype it up too much, but it's great. Watch it.
Yeah, I'm going to hype it. I am going to hype it up that much. Yes, I believe it is one of the greatest battle shonen ever. And the Dark Tournament is the best tournament in any shonen ever. So it deserves to be watched.
I can't argue with that. And we were speculating last night, Josh and I, as we were talking, and I think of Shonen Jump, which is the biggest manga anthology in history, I would put the main villain, or I mean, I guess he's not even the main villain in Yu Yu Hakusho, but he's the real main villain, and this is Toguro. Like, I would put him as like number four in their echelon of villains. Like, he's behind like Rao, Seto Kaiba, and Frieza. But that's a steer company in the pantheon of great villains. So
I think I'd probably throw like Don Flamingo in there for One Piece as well. But
that's reasonable. I mean,
I agree.
Shishio from Kenshin and Orochimaru from Naruto, but yeah,
absolutely. But yeah, I agree. If we're gonna talk about best villains of all time in anime in general, and especially in shonen, you absolutely have to throw Toguro in there. He's amazing, and in the anime you actually get to see him shine, which it's unfortunate we don't get to see that here in the live action.
Whenever you have a villain who comes along and gets defeated halfway through the series, but then becomes the measuring stick for all villains that come after him, like, you know that, like, he's done his job.
Yeah. And I also love the fact too, and of course the live action was never gonna have any time for this, since we're hyping Toguro here. I loved the fact that there was a bit of goofiness to his character too. He sort of had a bit of this like ho-hum affect, mm-hmm. You know. there's that really great scene where he's like murdered the tournament committee and Sakio offers him a glass of wine and he's just like, I'll take a glass of orange juice on ice, you know.
but yeah, I mean, if you just go through popular things that have come afterwards, like there are shades of Yu Yu Hakusho in Jujutsu Kaisen. There are shades of it in Evangelion. There are shades of it in Naruto. It's kind of one of those things that's permeated a lot of the lot of the subsequent media.
It's such a fun concept, and it's one that you don't see get executed so well because it's tough to execute well, is to have your, like, delinquent good guy.
Yeah.
Yusuke was such a convincing, like, sort of, like, unwitting hero in that, you know, I don't know if unwitting is even the right word. He's more like a, what do you call it, anti-hero or whatever.
Yeah.
But just the idea that, like, you'd have, he's got, like, very, at times, some, like, very Spider-Man qualities to him in combat, right, that he's, like, making fun of the bad guys, and he's pulling tricks on people, and, you know, and then he's, like, winning by getting lucky, and, like, he's got, like, there's, like, this scrappiness to him, you know.
He's a punk.
He's a punk, and he fights like a punk, and he expresses himself like a punk, and so, like, it's not just that he appears that way. You have, like, this fully realized punk hero character, you know, who then, like, even as he matures, has that sort of rebellious streak continue to, you know, to permeate his character through the entire rest of the series. You know, it even comes up around the end, you know, near the end of the Chapter Black, you know, arc, that, like, he's not capable of having the same breakdown that Sensui did, because he never trusted the system to begin with. So, like, he never has this sense of betrayal when he finds out that humans can be bad, because it's like, he's already seen humans be bad. This was no big shake, you know, big shocker to him. This whole humans good, demons bad. It's like, he had already given up on that dichotomy, you know, probably by the time he was done with the Artifacts of Darkness case, you know.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think Yu Yu Hakusho of the shonen pantheon is the most punk rock shonen there is. Everyone is so punk in this. It's you like you've already said, Yusuke, but also Kuwabara is just unrepentant, hilarious punk. Hiei is also a punk. The only, like, nice character you have is Kurama. And even then, his demon form, Yoko Kurama, is a punk.
Brutally killing people, yes.
The nice one in the group is basically Killua from Hunter x Hunter. Let's put that together.
Yes.
Well, the thing I like about it, too, is that, you know, Kuwabara could have easily just become, like, a Krillin-type character. But then, you know, Togashi actually still, like, lets him have some cool shining moments. Like when he beats Elder Tagoro, you know. Or
when he gives his big speech too at the end, right? End of the Dark Tournament. That's a great moment as well.
Yeah. Plus, I guess also the other good Dark Tournament moment for, you know, Kuwabara is like when he pulls out the big win against the ninja team when he's fighting the rock dude.
Yeah.
And he's on his last legs. And he sees Yukina in the crowd and suddenly gets like all of his energy back.
Oh, Yukina!
Punches the guy out of the
Yukina, my love.
Literally on his way, like, I'm gonna die in a glorious blaze of, wait a minute, the girl I have a hots for is in the crowd. Well, I'm not losing. Like, one punches him.
Yeah,
brilliant.
It was so good. It was so good. There's just so many moments like that in Yu Yu Hakusho, which is why it's just like, oh, well, since this live action is going, let us remind you, there's this fantastic anime that you should watch right now if you haven't already.
I will say.
The comedy of the one fight as well in the Dark Tournament where he's fighting the guy who keeps warping him away to the other arena.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he's just like, I just want to fight.
Yes.
Fight fairly.
So good.
I will say, if they decide, for some reason, to do a second season, I don't know if they can do that much damage to the Three Kings arc.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they could make it worse. I don't think you could make the Three Kings arc worse.
No, especially if, like, our measuring stick is the manga, because even the manga isn't really that great. Yeah. And yes, it has a lot to do with Togashi's, you know, back problems, his health issues, and everything just kind of being rushed at the end and him pushing himself to finish it. But yeah, there's no way that it could be good in any way. But you know, if they actually gave it five episodes like this, maybe it would be.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. We were talking about this, Kevin and I, the other day. You almost wonder if Togashi being broken by, you know, Shonen Jump may have eventually inspired them to be a little more lax on the schedule, like they've been with, you know, like, say, you know, Gege Akutami with, you know, Jujutsu Kaisen, where they're letting them take periodic breaks and whatnot.
I wish MAPPA would let their animators take breaks.
Yeah, no shit. Kidding. Yeah, we could do a whole episode on just that, frankly.
But at least at least those shows aren't running nonstop like Yu Yu Hakusho did.
Yeah,
like,
that would have been really awful. But yeah.
But I mean, it's fantastic also in terms of like the pacing of an anime adaptation, and that it covers the entire story, doesn't run out of source material, and doesn't do a lot of filler. Like,
yeah, and so that was also kind of why the live action almost felt unnecessary. There was just so little meat left on the bone that had yet been, you know, chewed. You know, it didn't feel like it had justified an entire new adaptation except to just, you know, do something new for the sake of doing something new. You know, yeah, it's like, not like, say, the Spriggan anime where it's like, yeah, we got one movie. Mm-hmm. It's not like, you know, Ushio and Tora where we got a 9-episode OVA that barely covered anything.
Well, or, the anime, the 37-episode, the newer Ushio and Tora is absolutely awesome.
Yes, it's fantastic. People should also watch that.
Everyone should watch that. That is amazing and underrated.
Yes. Which, of course, you know, just leaves, you know, as far as 90s adaptations that haven't been fully realized, really just leaves us with the Sanzen eyes / 3x3 eyes or 3x3 eyes.
Yeah, definitely.
We got a 9-episode OVA for that, too. Like to see that. Like to see that get the new adaptation treatment. But yeah, Yu Yu Hakusho didn't necessarily need it, but I could understand wanting to make a new one that had all of the nice glossy sheen of a newer production with a high budget, with a big budget and all that. Because yeah, I mean, look, Yu Yu Hakusho grew into a really nice looking anime. Mm-hmm. But admittedly, yeah, like the first, you know, 10-15 episodes, they were looking it was a little iffy episode to episode from time to time. Do I think that it really hurt it in the long run? Not really, you know. Not really, because I think the writing was good enough that it didn't matter that it didn't look fantastic. But if you wanted to use that to justify a new adaptation, I would have accepted that. This, on the other hand, not what I would have wanted to have seen, you know.
I would always be skeptical of a new Yu Yu Hakusho adaptation, just because we've seen a bunch of new adaptations of older things coming around recently. I mean, basically since Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood, where it's just kind of like,
And Yu Yu Hakusho would have been extra tricky to do right, because like, similar to something like Parasite, and this, you know, frankly, Sanzenai's adaptation would have this problem too, is that they're very much were products of the early 90s. The whole like delinquent, you know, delinquents roving about, getting into fights and causing all sorts of ruckus and whatnot. Like, this was like a actual like social issue in the 90s. And so there was a lot of familiarity with that. And that's why it's like it made so much sense to incorporate that into a shonen series at that time. And like, you see that in Slam Dunk also, right? You know, another 90s Shonen Jump property that like, you know, really just starting Yu Yu Hakusho over from the beginning again, you know, I just wonder if it would have had that same feeling of legitimacy that the original had, because you're kind of like going back and like, how do they handle the delinquent stuff? You know, as a sort of a, you know, a comparison, Parasite decided to not make it a period piece like it wasn't like an early 90s thing. So you have cell phones and you don't really have the Yankee looking delinquents. Mm-hmm. And I found that some of those things did some kind of were a little detrimental to the presentation, in my opinion. You know, in Parasite, they had to work around the fact that the writing wasn't accounting for cell phones, right? And so then they had to come up with all these goofy little excuses and shots for things like, well, I don't want to get too far into it, but they had to make excuses. And then additionally, you had these guys that were supposedly supposed to be punks that like look like a bunch of skinny frauds, you know, like a bunch of guys that like look like, you know, the worst thing they'd be doing is like taking drugs or something in an alley by themselves, not like the kind of guys that are like gonna grab some school kid and steal his lunch money, you know what I mean, and beat the snot out of him. Like, I mean, I just, you know, the whole like, that whole aesthetic, like, just doesn't really, it's not really part of the, like, anime aesthetic anymore. you know, and so I don't know what a 2023 Yu Yu Hakusho anime would even look like now.
Actually, I felt a little bit of that push and pull with this live action version, in terms of like the school uniforms are very much early 90s kind of school uniforms, but their hairstyles are more modernized, but then they aren't using cell phones or any kind of modern technology, but then the cars that they're driving around look modern, and it's kind of like trying to they got a foot in each world.
Yeah, which of course, like I said, most of that in this case we're just talking about pure aesthetics at this point, but yeah, it's weird stuff that like that's more like speaking to the struggle of adapting something that was originally made, you know, 30 years ago, 30 plus years ago.
Yeah, yeah. You're not going to modernize Kamagura Orange Road, for an example.
No, you couldn't.
No, actually, you know? I do remember there being one cell phone in this, and that was, you remember when Kurama had that Samsung Galaxy tablet that, like, would grant any wish on a full moon?
You mean that was the one that had a heartbeat?
Yeah, that one. That was a pretty cool cell phone.
Yes, very cool cell phone. But anyway. All right, what else we got? Anything else we want to talk about?
I feel like I've covered most of my points, but
yeah, I think I'm spent on points myself.
I think I'm spent as well. I'm just terrified that they're going to make Hunter x Hunter next.
Oof. Oh, boy. I would not be surprised, but I share your apprehension.
I think they need to make sure to do a live action level E adaptation first.
Oh, they got to go in order. Okay.
Yes. Honestly, live action level E I would be there for.
I think that would actually work very well, I think.
Yeah. I don't want to see, you know, 17-year-old Gon played by a 20 something.
Yeah, we'll just get Timothy
Chalamet. Oh yeah, I forgot they did age the characters up in this, didn't they? Yeah. Yusuke's not 14 anymore, which admittedly it makes a lot more sense for him to be 17 than 14, but whatever. So they're wearing middle school uniforms in high school? Is that what we get here? Again, it's aesthetic stuff, people. I'm not nitpicking, I swear.
All right. Well, on that note, I think we'll wrap it up. And thanks for listening, if you still are. And leave a comment with all of your angry thoughts about how we are doing a great disservice to this masterpiece of a program.
Like, subscribe, and smash that follow button or whatever. I don't know.
That sounds like something that would happen in the new Chapter Black saga.
Yeah. Chapter Black in modern times would just be a bunch of like YouTube like video essays, basically.
Yeah. Chapter Black is totally just Sensui on his couch just doom scrolling.